ways to stay together. Until next week, as always, you are on.
And now it's time for Stages.
All the world's a stage.
It's where we talk about,
All things
theatrical.
It's about theatre.
Theatre makers.
If it's performing on a stage, we've got it for you here on Stages.
It's about half an hour long.
Okay, let's get on with the show.
Hello and welcome to another week of Stages, where we're keeping the fire lit on the theatre scene as it transforms during this time, this very unusual time. I'm Regina Botros to take you through the next half an hour, and I'm very excited to have a chat with the new Chief Executive Officer of the Carriage Works, Blair French, who has stepped into the very big shoes of Lisa Havila at the Carriage Works. And I'm very much looking forward to not just about how they're dealing with the situation and how it's going to affect the stages down there, but also where Blair has come from, how he's gotten to be here. He has walked in many of the big establishments of our time. He's worked across the Museum of Contemporary Art, art space, and the performance space. So he has a long list of credentials behind him, and I'm very excited to have a chat with him. So stick around for that. I'll be bringing you a few things that I've been seeing on the online stage. And but before we go any further, one of our own, Benito D'Afonso, has written his response to the situation. He is a brother of Stages. He used to be on here all the time. He is a close friend of mine. He's a musician, he's a playwright, and a poet. So here is his coronavirus baby at response to COVID. Over to you, Benito.
You're my coronavirus baby. You make me crazy. You're my coronavirus girl. Don't wanna touch anybody else. You're my coronavirus baby. You make me hazy. You're my coronavirus girl. Wash my hands of everybody else. Please isolate with me. I want to be by your antibodies. Sans you, I'm all at sea. I need a friendly harbor. My ship is shoddy. 'Cause you're my coronavirus baby. You make me crazy. You're my coronavirus girl. Don't wanna touch anybody else. You're my coronavirus baby. You make me hazy. You're my coronavirus girl. Wash my hands of everybody else. I wanna be homeschooled. I know that you can teach me to be pandemic free. We're locked down from the fools. Both biochemically and academically. You're my coronavirus baby. You make me crazy. You're my coronavirus girl. Don't wanna touch anybody else. You're my coronavirus baby. You make me hazy. You're my coronavirus girl. I wash my hands of everybody else.
You're my coronavirus baby.
Well, on the line, we have the Chief Executive Officer of the Carriage Works. He's done multiple big space gallery work. He's worked at the Museum of Contemporary Art, Visual Arts Centre, Performance Space. He's a writer. He's published. He's worked overseas, both in the UK and I think he hails from New Zealand. He's on the line, Blair French from the Carriage Works, to have a chat with us today. Welcome to Stages, Blair.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. Now, you have stepped into the big shoes of Lisa Havilah, who we've spoken to a number of times here on Stages, and they turned, or she, with the Carriage Works, turned the new normal, which is the most heard and I use all the time in our current times. But before we jump straight into where the Carriage Works is at, I wanted to get a little bit of an idea of where you come from. So where do you hail from, Blair?
Oh, well, you were correct. I hail from New Zealand. I was actually born in the Cook Islands, but raised in New Zealand. My family are from New Zealand, going back many generations. But I've been over here in Sydney for 25 years, actually. So it's probably the longest I've ever spent in any one city, that's for sure. So it sort of feels very much like home now.
So were you born into a kind of creative family? Were you introduced to the arts or to theatre or to music really at an early age?
Not at all, actually. My father was a scientist who sort of had a second career as a mathematician. My mother came from a very working class family, so coal miners and timber workers, forestry workers, boilermakers, that sort of background. Mm-hmm. And no, I'm not quite sure where it came from. I always had a really, I grew up in a reasonably small provincial city in New Zealand. I had a pretty sort of conventional upbringing in that regard. Lots of sport was probably the main thing that sort of drove the community. My interest was really very much in the written word and in literature and actually in the craft of writing. And, you know, when I was younger, my career aspiration was actually to be a journalist. So, and it was really the sort of love of language. It just sort of led an interesting way to studying art history at universities alongside English. And that just sort of grew into writing art criticism for the student newspaper and then sort of working full-time in student journalism and getting a few opportunities to develop my sort of critical voice at daily newspapers in New Zealand and Christchurch and in Dunedin, and that led me to my first sort of gallery job. So it just kind of grew step by step in a sense.
So when did you move from the writing into space, into the actual kind of art spaces that you've worked in?
It was, you know, one of those sort of serendipitous moments one has. I was working in a bookshop and I was writing, or also forms of writing, but particularly I was writing art criticism for the local newspaper. This was in Dunedin, in the very south of the South Island. What's now known as Te Papa, Te Papa Tongarewa, the Museum of New Zealand, late 1980s. This new institution would be created that reflected the kind of bicultural model of the country. I applied for an art curatorial internship, and I was one of two people that were accepted to work in that field, to work in art curatorship. And I was, I think, across the whole 10 or 12 people across all the disciplines, there were two of us that were Pākehā, and the rest were, the roles went to young Māori. So I ended up heading off to the National Gallery, as it was then, in Wellington, as a curatorial intern.
Mm. You say on the website the ability or capacity of creative practices to change individuals and communities. How does art do that?
Well, that does it in a whole variety of ways. I mean, there is, you know, I also am kind of fascinated by something that happened quite privately between an individual and a work of art that's very difficult to explain sometimes, which in a sense sort of seems to operate outside of, in its own little bubble outside of culture, but that's never really quite the case. We all come to works of art or, you know, and by works of art I mean that whether it be a piece of theatre or a piece of music or a piece of visual art, we come, you know, with certain ways of thinking and certain ways of viewing the world, and often the really exciting, profound moments are when you kind of recognise that in yourself. A work of art actually helps you recognise the position that you're bringing to it and flips it, or at least challenges you to do so. And, you know, challenge sounds a tough word, but often it's in a really kind of playful and enjoyable way. But I think what I saw through that time at that gallery was the in a sense, the sociality of artists working as part communities. The ideas and the conversations, and even artists for whom the sort of isolated studio model seemed to be prevalent, you know, had communities of ideas and personalities. And that I think, has become more and more recognised and prevalent and actually built into exhibition making and models now, and built into the way in which institutions themselves operate.
Did you also say just then that before that there was a particular personal experience that you had as well that changed the way you thought about art?
I don't know if there's been any one sort of
moment.
Critical moment. I mean, you occasionally get asked this question or a version of this question. We sort of, you know, what are your favourite works of art? And I think they don't change, but they sort of build. You know, there are always things that you remember from certain moments in your life. You know, everyone associates a song with a particular thing that was happening to them then. That's kind of, I think, similar with works of art. I mean, I have, through my career, worked with different models of practice at different points. You know, I've worked with photography quite closely for a period of time and really been immersed in thinking about photography, and that's partly because it fascinates me. And there have been moments where I've focused on abstract painting, which could appear to be entirely different. But again, because there are aspects of it that fascinate me or draw me to it. I mean, I'm quite sort of eclectic, I guess, in my tastes. But I think for me, what got me started really early on, and it was simply I walked into the offices of the student newspaper when I was an undergraduate, and sort of very nervously, and sort of could have full of cool people when I wasn't, and nervously said I wanted to do something, and they said, well, what are you studying? And I went English, and it was kind of like, well, everyone's studying English. And I said, well, I'm studying art history. And they said, oh, great, we've got no one to write art reviews. Literally picked up an invite, you know, a cardboard invite off the table, and put it in my hand and said, can you go away and write 500 words on this? I had no idea what I was doing. Absolutely no idea. But even from I kind of remember those very first reviews. They did make me really think about, well, why am I interested in looking at work about and what happens when I write about it? And what most interested me in a work of art was actually trying to understand how somebody else was being in and thinking about the world. Okay. Yeah, so it's actually ultimately a fascination with other people.
I'm really interested in this as a theatre person, and you know, you go and see a work of art, and are you reviewing it? Are you critiquing it? How are you engaging with the work? And also the relationship between the person that reads the critique or the reviewer. There's a whole other world there about critiquing. But what do you think is the most important question then? If you're, you know, is it about understanding the person that made the artwork rather than what the artwork is doing to you? Is that what you're sort of suggesting?
But no, it's not. It's not about understanding the person behind there. It's actually about looking at the object and encountering the object and whatever. You know, and often it's not an object. Of course, it could be an environment and trying to understand both its purchase on the world more broadly and its purchase on you. It's this kind of, you're in a space with another entity, with something else, and that something else has, you know, kind of, hopefully, if it's a good piece of work, it has a certain sort of agency in relationship to the world around it and in relationship to you, but you have to work that out.
Your personal experience of it. So let's get into the Carriage Works and where we are. So you've worked obviously in New Zealand, and you've also been to the UK, and now you're here at the Carriage Works and been around Sydney. Actually, before we get into that, I know that you have worked through crisis before when you were in Christchurch. Can you tell me about working in an institution or somewhere where you need to consider that such a big thing that's happening on the outside within the way that you work inside?
Yeah, I mean, my Christchurch experience was, you know, both inside and outside in a sense. Mm. I was you know, living here, but had been invited to curate or to lead the curatorial team on a biennial of public art. So I think it was the sixth biennial of public art in Christchurch called SCAPE. And I began that work in 2009 and the curators and I came up with a way of thinking about the inner city, kind of beautiful but run down, and a lot of abandoned or empty old buildings that were being used, you know, by artists and by bands, and you know, so it made the city interesting. But the city had a real plan, been working with an urban planner from Europe, to rethink its inner city. So we wanted to use those spaces, plot, you know, and get artists to engage with those spaces before they kind of disappeared, in a sense. A city I had a strong connection with, it was where I where I studied. I guess if you were not from Christchurch or New Zealand, you sort of forget the sequence of things, but there was actually quite a significant earthquake in September 2010. It was just before we opened that biennial. And it, no one was killed, but it did some fairly significant damage to the inner city. In parts of the inner city, buildings were sort of roped off and various things. And we had to postpone the biennial, and we changed our public programming a lot, not so much the art projects, but to really, our idea had been to try and put a conversation about the inner city into the, you know, into action, I guess, into public action, and the earthquake sort of did that work for us. And we were then scheduled to open in late March of 2011, and so 10 days or so before our opening, the big earthquake occurred. But in the intervening 6 months, there were the city kind of shook constantly. I know, there was like 8,000 or 9,000 aftershocks. You kind of experienced this sort of very different sense of a city, literally a space that was physically alive in uncertain ways, and the sort of uncertainty that played out with it. I assumed after that major quake that we probably just had to put a red line through that biennial and say, you know, it's, you know, circumstances have overtaken us. And I sat down and met with the team of the, you know, the organisation I was working with, and most of whom were, had had to leave their houses, were sort of sleeping in families' places or on floors. It was all, you know, everyone was just so disrupted. And so I said, well, I guess we have to put a line through it. And they all got a little bit upset and said, well, no, we have to do this. This is even more important than ever. But I think the key thing I learned, if it comes down to right now, which I think about, is the importance of care for people and the awareness that, you know, every time I went over, again, sort of every 4 to 6 weeks, something like that, different people I was working with, different members of my team, different artists, different people on council, engineers, all various people I was working with, would often be in very, very different emotional states than where they'd been 6 weeks earlier. It's sort of being very alert to how people, every day is different. And in fact, every part of every day is different. You might be up in the morning and down in the afternoon. In a very different way, but in a sense, we're all in that right now.
Absolutely. It feels very much a description of the waves of feelings that, you know, come and go. This sort of, you know, in some ways you feel, I keep saying, I sometimes feel a bit like a bit Stockholm syndrome and, you know, kind of loving this lockdown and then fearful of it and then like threatened in so many other ways. And yeah, there's sort of waves of different feelings that go. Absolutely. So what would have been on now and what is going to be on?
Well, exactly. I'm trying to think what week we're up to. I mean, we were about to move into a very busy period of major events. So Sydney Writers Festival should only be, you know, 10 days or so away from it, followed by Fashion Week, followed by...
there's always so much going on down there.
There's always so much going on. So all those activities, but then also, you know, we well, we haven't opened, but at the timing was such, and I mean, there are stories like this all over the world, but we were installing a really major exhibition by Giselle Stambra, a Sydney artist, which is part of the Cathy Cavalieri Fellowship program. So it's a major opportunity for women or female-identifying artists to realise huge projects. So there's, it's a partnership of ACRA in Melbourne and Mona in Hobart, and each of whom are showing a different artist. So we're showing Giselle. And we'd started that installation early March, and you could sort of see things happening on the horizon, thinking, well, do we stop installing? No, let's just continue. We don't know how this is going to play out. Let's realise the work. Let's realise Giselle's extraordinary vision for this piece. It's a major, major work. And, of course, we basically finished it, and we had to close the week it was due to actually open to the public. So we had this piece that's sort of sitting quiet, complete.
Purely visual.
I mean, where, like so many institutions, where unfortunately this piece, you know, Giselle's fascinated by social media and the internet, and this piece is a sort of massive performative material manifestation of some of the architecture of the internet in many ways, or the architecture and information flows and desires that are played out in social media. So we're now realising the work, it's not so much that we're documenting the piece online as working with Giselle to realise the ideas using some of that material that's sitting in the gallery, but to remake in some ways this piece as an online at the moment.
So there will be a visual, there will be an online installation with
Giselle? Yeah, there's quite an online presence in the journal section of the Courage Works website. You'll get a really, it's just, again, we're just one of thousands of institutions that this is forcing us to think differently in the way in which we work with the artist. So many wonderful things you can do online, but it feels like that's almost also an overload. And there remains something very special, as we know, about the experience of live theatre or live performance or the experience of being together. In a physical space, whether it's at the markets or at an exhibition or at a talk, and I think we're all going to be craving that. So I mean, we're going to be in a really great place at some point about the thing that we do and do very well and do in a really diverse way is exactly that which I think communities and publics are just going to be craving. But it's also that which may be the last thing that we as a community and a society can actually get back to.
I think it's really hard to do theatre online. I've watched a few, even, really good national theatre productions, and, it's just such a different experience. It doesn't compare at all. Do you think this will change the, the future practice? There'll be long-term effects?
It's really hard to say, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. I feel that the kind of core art form practices that we talk about will come out of this at the other end fairly much in one piece. They might have to, just logistically and financially and et cetera, rebuild their institutions somewhat. But the actual practice, I think, will be there. I think it's rethinking a little bit about what we do online, actually, because there's now such a plethora of material that you can really start to, as you just sort of alluded to, you can really start to get a sense of what's really exciting and interesting and thought through, the online nature of it is being really thought through, and what's essentially sort of piling a whole lot of material, the archive dump or whatever, online, because, we need to be active and we need to be sharing this, but it's not necessarily done in the most fantastic way or what we feel is necessary and what's actually really refined and thought through. I think that will actually change how we work online a little bit in the future. And I think we were becoming more and more conscious of this in all industries, but in the arts and culture area, is, this coupled with climate crisis that we still continue to face, of course, that, the way in which we work globally, the way in which we work internationally, the way in which we transport people and materials and objects and exhibitions, etc. I think we're all in the process of rethinking that a little bit anyway, what the footprint of that means. And, what will happen, I'm pretty sure, is that when all the cultural institutions are sort of staging their reopenings, hopefully sooner rather than later, by necessity there's going to be an extraordinary focus on Australian artists and work. And that could be really exciting.
Absolutely. And I was going to say, in fact, it does make it, there's a whole lot of, maybe there's an online audience that you couldn't get. They're not able to come to the Courage Works. So there is a potential for that global world, that we've been moving toward with the online. Is there anything exciting or interesting that you have caught over the last few weeks or looking forward to seeing online?
Interestingly, I mean, or maybe not, but for me, I've just found more time to be thinking about writing online, mainly looking at journalism online, actually, which is probably what I've always done, but it's felt more urgent to try and wade my way through it. But the online sort of art experience for me, that we were just talking in one of our sort of teams meeting earlier, that, you know, there's a piece in The Age, I think, today about AFCA down in Melbourne, Australian Centre for Contemporary Art, doing something which is exactly what I was just talking about. Effectively, what they've done is they're putting out a call for artists to create new commissions for artists to work solely online. So not to take a body of work that they've been working on, or to take an exhibition they haven't been able to open, etc., and put it up online, but to actually produce new work for the online environment. And that, to me, is the most interesting. And I have been sort of looking at other parts of the world where that's sort of starting to pop up. And we did, when I was at the Museum of Contemporary Art some years ago, we did what we called the MCA's first online artist commission, where we did exactly that, where we commissioned an artist to make a work that solely existed in the online environment. And I think that's a really interesting moment and place. It's actually asking artists to think into a different context, to think into a different environment, to think into a different sort of sense of space and materiality, rather than to try and translate
something already that we already have.
Yeah, for one context into another. And I'm certainly kind of keeping an eye out for that type of activity. And a lot of that, I think, is happening just through art. I mean, you know, in a sense, what you see that sort of material on social media apps in many ways, and it's about how artists have an opportunity now, or have less of an opportunity maybe, and more of a necessity to think through the amplification of that into artworks, more sort of nuanced and layered artworks.
And also then you're talking about the immediacy and the kind of arts reacting to the times. Well, Blair French, thank you so much for joining me during this time.
Okay.
Alone there in the Carriage Works offices. More cavernous than ever, I suppose. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, Blair French there, the Chief Executive Officer of the Carriage Works. And if you have a look online, you can see the work of Giselle, Internet Narcissism, Corporate Surveillance and the Manipulation of Social Media Algorithms, Touchpoints for Synopticon. Worth having a look and getting involved online. You've been listening to Stages. I'm Regina Botros. And it's almost time for us to say so long, farewell. I did catch a couple of things online, some great stuff circulating out there. One particular standout for me was Inside, made in 2011. It's a full 6-hour work by Demetrius Papaino. It's all in one shot, unedited, and took place in a room set inside a theatre. And there are up to 30 performers in this work in different combinations coming in and out. And it just looks like the inside of a very stark apartment with the bed, a shower in the background, a view out of the balcony. But I really like that kind of stuff. And I've seen so much music online. It is really terrific. So I'm going to leave you with one local, Bernie Hayes. He's playing again online this Friday. This will be his third or fourth. I'm lost track. But they're really, you feel like you're part of a community tuning in there. You've been listening to Stages. I'm Regina Botros. I'll be back next week to bring you more voices from the people that are trying to hold on to theatre in this very difficult time. Stay safe and stay well.
I think this time I'm gonna let you let me go. Well, maybe, maybe I like you enough, although I know that it's gonna be tough. You've been bearing the load, and the dark, your tears have been